you can take baby steps. It's not a race. You know, every step forward is a step forward, and that's a win, and there's a lot of satisfaction to be taken out of that.
Welcome to the Passionate Painter Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Italia Carlson. Whether your art is a full-time career or your side gig, if you are passionate about creating art, this podcast is for you. Don't worry about taking notes. I'll do that for you. And you can find them at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Welcome back. In today's podcast, I get to introduce you to my newfound soul sister, Kira Barsotti. I love how Kira's work successfully integrates the soulful with the playful. It's addicting, and I can't wait to see what she's going to do next. This conversation touches upon many areas that I know you'll resonate with, from finding your voice as an artist, to making time for your art, to pricing and selling your work on your terms. Now, if you're a regular listener, I'm sure you've heard me say there's no right way to be an artist. And it's true. But there are definitely some common traits successful people of any practice share. And Kira has them in spades. The ones I'm talking about here are curiosity, flexibility, and self-awareness. All the things you need to have to benefit from a growth mindset. I know you'll enjoy hearing from Kira as much as I did. Make sure you swing by the show notes for this episode to check out Kira's work and all the links we mention, including a downloadable page from Kira's personal planner. If you're a self-professed organization geek, like me and Kira, you're gonna love it. Enjoy the show. I'm happy to announce, as promised, in addition to my full master class, The Portrait Code, 7 new Spotlight courses are now available for targeted training in design, composition, perspective, color theory, and anatomy, as well as a standalone portrait painting demonstration. I've had requests for those who only want the targeted training to pull these out of the master class so that they can be available individually if desired. As always, they're available at incredible prices because I want them to be accessible. You can check them out and see course content by going to PassionatePainterAcademy.com. Kira Barsotti loves to paint landscapes inspired by her travels around the United States that inspire people to reconnect with the land they inhabit. She's developed a completely unique mixed media technique that lends itself to the ephemeral quality of our changing world. Kira's an avid hiker and runner and has been painting and making art since she could hold a crayon. After living everywhere from Santa Cruz, California to Williamsburg, Virginia in the last decade, Kira and her husband have settled back in their hometown of Chico, accompanied by 2 cats, William Blake and Nobody, and are expecting their first child, due in December of 2022. Kira, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's terrific to see you. I'm glad to talk to you again.
Yes.
I would love for you to start us off by telling our listeners about your background and where you're at now with your art.
Yeah. So like many artists, I've been painting and drawing since I could hold a pencil. I've taken classes here and there at local art centers. Eventually did take some courses at a local community college. I was one class shy of getting my studio art associate's degree, but that was my focus there. And that was awesome, particularly because I pretty much got married right out of high school. Wasn't really sure what I was going to do. My husband had his whole track plan. So I was like, I'll just, you know, hitch my wagon to him and kind of see what happens. And eventually decided, okay, you know, I'm going to try and take this art thing seriously. It was always something that I had considered throughout my youth in high school. And I've always been an entrepreneur. Like since I was a kid, I had pet sitting businesses. I sold little arts and crafts. I just have that in me. And so in my early 20s, I went to Cabrillo College, and that was really an awesome environment for me. I felt like I was really supported, and it was great to be with other creatives, other people who, and at community college, you've got an age range too. So you've got people who are there just starting out, people younger than me, people older than me. So there wasn't like the same kind of, you know, I haven't been to like art school officially, but as far as like the cutthroat, we're all gonna, you know, become the next best artist. It was very like, we're all figuring this out together kind of a thing. So that really spurred on my first big painting series, which I showcased around town. This was in Santa Cruz, California. I found myself kind of going in fits and starts though, mm-hmm. and really feeling resentful that I couldn't just jump into doing it full time. And, you know, a lot of my own fear was holding me back from that. Also, being married, you got to make decisions together. He's a little more risk averse than me, which is good because I would be the starving artist model if not for him. So that kind of, you know, right before the pandemic, I just got really burnt out. Just all the hustle, all the striving for what felt like very little results. And so I kind of shuttered everything at that point. And then the pandemic happened. So I just kind of went into like withdrawal mode and took a step back from everything. And it was good. I really needed that time and space to rest. And at the prompting of a business coach through the whiteboard room, I was kind of thinking, you know, I kind of want to get back into this, but I don't know, you know, last time wasn't great. And she just encouraged me to just start painting again. And see if I could get that practice going again. And that was huge for me because I had been so long feeling like I had to create something specifically for my audience. And this was just for me. And it's crazy how we can get so far away from why we started in the first place, you know, and what really feeds us. So that was great. And I feel like in this iteration of my business, I've really been able to hold true to that and have found that it's been a lot more joyful. It's been a lot more experimental, a lot less pressure. I think some of that comes with age and having more perspective in life. But anyway, that's kind of where I'm at today.
Well, I do have to say, being an old lady now, age is awesome. It
yes.
gives you a lot of freedom.
Yep.
And
for sure.
You get to a point where you just, your give a damn is busted. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. Especially mm-hmm. after I had my medical things that I ended up being fine after, that was a big thing. I was just like, mm-hmm. you know what? I cannot seem to generate the energy to have an ulcer over this unreasonable deadline or expectations that aren't clearly communicated, et cetera. So speaking up becomes easier and identifying, I think, your needs and drawing those boundaries that have to be drawn, especially as a creative, as an artist, being able to speak up as if you know, I tell my friends, if they have trouble and they ask me, what should I do? I say, and I struggle with this. I'll probably call you next week and say, Kira, what should I do? But I will say to them, what would you tell me if I was in this position? You know, would you tell your best friend? Mm-hmm. So good for you for being so aware and being able to figure that out so soon. Because you're very wise.
One of my hobbies is self-development, so.
It's obvious. Me too. I'm a self-development geek.
Yep, totally.
Yep. So speaking specifically about your art, how did you find your voice as an artist? And you know that's going to require talking a little bit about the Space Cowgirl.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's a tricky one. You know, you can do worksheets and stuff. There's always like free workshops and worksheets. Find your voice as an artist. But that one really just takes time and practice. You know, the time part is the experimenting part. And you need to give yourself time to try stuff out. And then the practice part is the trying stuff out. So, you know, I found for myself, I was just really drawn to this imagery of like this retro futurist, you know, desert landscapes, made up desert landscapes. And then the Space Cowgirls really just married very well with that. But I didn't really have like, what does this mean? You know, I just knew that I loved it visually. And of course, everyone wants an artist statement. Everyone asks you, well, what does this mean? And then I have to make something up, you know? And one thing I've found that worked really well was turning that question back on the asker of the question is, well, what do you think it means? And then you get really interesting answers, and it really helps yourself formulate your own thoughts, you know, and I do consider myself a good writer, but I think a lot of artists don't necessarily have the language and the words to go with their visual language. So you just have to practice. You just have to start trying. What do I think this means? And then as you're talking to people, your friends, your patrons, because people are going to ask if you're sharing your work, as you're telling them, well, this is what, you know, was going through my mind, or this is what I thought, then you're able to see what resonates with you, what resonates with them, and it kind of develops from there. So as far as like a spoken voice, which I think is the hard part for a lot of artists, it just takes time and practice and time spent talking to people about your work. And it's a really fun thing to get into, especially if you can dialogue with people about it.
Now, I agree with you. I had an interesting conversation, and this is when I realized the magic of you don't actually have to over-explain your art, because I know that line between explaining and going so far into the granular description that people go, oh, now they're closed out of it and it's all about you. There's that's an important line to leave that channel open. But I had a solo show when I graduated college. It was a requirement, and I do figurative. So at the time, it was all self-portraits, because guess who was a cheap model that was always available? So, you know, and I was sick of painting myself, but so be it. So this guy walks up and he's staring at this portrait of me, which was a life-size self-portrait, and he's looking at it and he goes, this has so much meaning for me. And he goes, he points it at my portrait and he goes, that's my mother. And I'm like, I'm standing right next to him. And I flatter myself, it was a decent likeness, you know, but I was just wow, you know, it really doesn't matter. It can add interest, but people can take it or leave it. So I don't know, maybe on the website could be a drop down if you really want to know what this meant to me or something, where they don't know unless they click. But it's an interesting question and an interesting boundary.
Yeah. And just the phrase that comes to mind is follow your bliss, which I hate that phrase, but really that's the best thing to encompass finding your voice is, what do you like? You know, what are you drawn to all the time? And to your point, putting words to it or not, some people care, some people don't. You know, it's good to have it available on your website or to have something to say when people ask, but yeah, people are going to be drawn to and interpret things the way they are. And that's why we all love art, right?
And I think it's important, the bliss factor. Throughout my career, I've done a lot of commercial digital work. I'm still doing digital multimedia and consulting with a lot of, right now I'm doing a lot of writing, which has been good for my art career. So it's been a blessing. But for me, the delineation between commercial art and fine art isn't as much whether I'm working digitally or working on a canvas, although I do, for me, it's oil on canvas because I'm an old fashioned girl. But it has to do with whether or not I'm painting something because it speaks to me and it's my voice. And this is, if you follow your heart, I think that your voice is there. It's there the whole time. It's when you quiet and you show up and you spend the time being present at your easel or your grinding stone or potter's wheel or where you know, your sculpting studio, your camera, if you're a photographer, I mean, whatever your art, that you will finally be able to recognize the voice that's always been there.
Yeah.
I think it's more uncovering the layers, you know, it's an onion.
Yeah, it is.
So how does art fit into your life these days? Is it part-time? Is it full-time? Is it a hybrid? What does your crazy life look like? I know you're expecting your first baby. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, and that has really thrown a wrench in everything, as it is expected to.
As it should,
exactly. So I have been full-time working a day job. Fortunately, I get to work from home. So that is one amazing silver lining of COVID. I find that my work-life satisfaction and balance has gone way up since then. And then I paint, you know, this studio, those of you who are watching on YouTube, this is where I work. This is where I paint. I'm in this little nook pretty much all day long, unless I'm in the living room knitting. And yeah, so it's part-time, the art. And especially with the baby on the way, I am super grateful to have the stability of the day job and the insurance and the framework and the routine. There's a lot to be said for that. Of course, I would love to eventually do this full-time, the art. And I know I have it in me, but for right now, since I've taken kind of the urgency and the timeline off of needing to do it full-time, I find I'm enjoying the process a lot more. I'm much happier generally in my life. And I feel like I'm able to make decisions based on what's actually going to work for me versus what I think I need to be doing in order to jump into full-time. So, you know, I think these days, well, and maybe just in the history, in all of American history, because we tend to be very urgent people, it feels like there's just a lot of pressure to take the leap right now. And I find, you know, anytime I do like goal setting workshops or worksheets or journaling, the things I want out of my full-time art business are all very, it's not things like I want a yacht and a second home. I mean, I'd love to have a second home, but who wouldn't?
In Michigan.
Yeah.
Upper Michigan. You can move in next door.
We can be neighbors. I would love more snow in my life, but that's
I can give you plenty of snow. Winter is from November until May. Usually it's done by May. I can't make any guarantees.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. Instead, we have 8 months of summer here.
Ugh, that's why I left California.
Exactly.
So you were talking about the things you value.
Yeah, the things I value. And those are totally within reach now. And the minute I was able to like decouple, you know, putting all the pressure on, oh, I can't have these things unless I'm full-time artist and successful in bringing in an income, I'm just much happier. And I'm like, mission accomplished, you know?
Amen, sister.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's interesting because I spent a number of years working at National Wellness Institute, doing marketing there and digital creative design. And so what they talked about a lot was, of course, in wellness is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And mm-hmm. so it's a pyramid, and it has to do with the fact that people have a number of needs on a number of levels. And the creativity piece doesn't come into play until your basic needs are met.
Yep.
So I think it's important for people to realize, A, the fact that if they don't feel secure and they jump off the dock before they know if the boat is there, which I don't actually endorse.
Yeah.
They're probably going to be in survival mode and the creativity completely tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And B, what is their personality? Because yes. if they're a risk taker and they're, I mean, you know, I was raised by wolves. My parents were both entrepreneurs and I have definitely that entrepreneurial gene, but I'm still risk averse in a lot of ways. And knowing my personality enables me to identify how best I can focus on my creativity and let it out of the box. And for me, that means knowing that the bills are covered. I still don't work full-time as a fine artist, although I am working toward that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when that's going to happen. It depends on what comes along. Mm-hmm. I've honestly, thank God, I've never been at a loss for work in the digital multimedia realm that keeps showing up. So I have opted to go with a base of security and do those things so that I can continue to create my own timelines and space for art on the side. But I've also chosen to have a family,
mm-hmm.
the kid thing, the husband who is wonderful and understands and has a secure base. I chose not to marry another entrepreneur.
Right.
It was a choice at some point along the way. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, do I really want this? Where I grew up with that real level of adventure, you know, it was a scary ride.
Yeah.
Because both people had unpredictable incomes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so things were like this. And you know what? They did a miraculous job with what they had at the time. I learned a lot, but I grew up thinking, I'm going to get me a desk job. So, yeah. And that's, you know what? That's part of my personality. So it has to be a mix of what you're comfortable with. And I think that if you're going full time, you have to know when that's right for you and really learn to listen to your own comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
And not betray your own comfort level, because if you do that, again, the creativity is just going to go, psh, see ya.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's also kind of a myth that once you're a full-time artist, you just get to paint all day and, you know, you're
sorry.
All of your time is, yeah, all of your time is your own. And it's just, you know, the Instagram, Pinterest.
Oh yeah.
You know, but you still have to prioritize making the art, because then you're going to be slammed with making the money.
Right.
You know, so either way, you pick your poison.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
So you talk about that. So do you think we've already covered this one? But what I wanted to ask you is ways our listeners can manage their mindset around their art to know if it's really something they want to do full time, or if they just aren't feasibly able to take the plunge yet, or if embracing the security of a day job would be beneficial, like it was for me, to exhale and make their art.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think we've touched on a lot of it at this point. Yeah. All I would say is just know yourself and know your life circumstances. You know, with my partner, a lot of my resentment came from feeling like we were at odds. And eventually I realized, no, this is the life I chose. And I would rather be in this position with him and figuring out life with him. And so it's now on me to figure out how all the pieces fit together. The point being, you know, you do have to recognize the reality you're living in and make choices. And you cannot have it all as much as we like to think we can. You pick and choose what you want. And if you find that you work better with that security, then great. Like, let go of the idea of being a full-time artist. Or if you find that you're constantly drawn to it, keep working at it. And it doesn't have to happen overnight. Like, this is, I feel like, been the theme of our conversation so far, is you can take baby steps. It's not a race. You know, every step forward is a step forward, and that's a win. And there's a lot of satisfaction to be taken out of that.
I agree with you 100%. And I think a lot of it speaks to the acceptance about figuring out what you need and what works best for you, and not mm-hmm. judging it, not yes. taking yeah. that and assigning a meaning to it. I do a lot of meditation and a lot of work with Centerpoint Institute. They talk about that the problems people come up against when they are struggling and repeating patterns and saying, well, why do I always end up in this job that doesn't work for me, or with this person? And they've married the same person 5 times in different bodies, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, that they keep encountering the same problem. And there's a gap between what you do, your reaction to it, and realizing that you're doing it and really being aware and learning to make choices consciously.
Mm-hmm.
And when you learn to put that extra step in and make the conscious choices, as you were saying, of, I want to have a family. For me, that was part mm-hmm. of it. That was,
yeah.
that was definitely, I mean, I had so many points at which I could have made different choices. I could have gone to Italy in college, and I got in. I spent the summer learning Italian. I got into the program. Then I got the bill. And I knew in my head what the bill was, but somehow there was a miscommunication about, you know, the financial aid and how it was going to work. And so I would have graduated probably a year off schedule, you know, extra. And I would have had to pay that bill out of pocket and as I went or whatever. It didn't work financially. It would have really either devastated me, thrown a monkey wrench in my plans, et cetera, financially. So I chose to back out of that, and I actually passed up the opportunity, and I thought it was going to kill me, but, you know, but I owned it. I thought I remember my mom looking at the letter with me and saying, do you want me to call them and shut this down? And I said, no, I want to do this. I need to.
Yeah.
Cause I was upset, you know, so she was yeah. like, just being my friend.
Right.
And I'm like, no, I need to make this call. And that was important for me to say, I choose not to take on this debt before I have a job.
Yeah.
You know, I chose not to go to grad school at the time because, again, the financial piece would have put me in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
I chose to have children and have a family, and I wanted the stability I didn't have. Like I said, I was fortunate for what I did have and learn, but I wanted something different for my future And it meant not flying off to Paris and taking the risks and saying, woohoo, who cares? You know, we'll just figure it out and I can live in an alley and whatever.
Yeah.
It was the choices that I said, I want this. I want this person. He helps to keep me level so that I consider all the other people and all of our general goals together of this picture that we want to live our life. I don't just want to race to the end to be this, like you said, compete to be best artist. And then I'm standing out there alone. Like, where did everybody go? Because I don't have any relationships. But yes, you don't get to always have all the pieces at the same time as far as those goals. I may do full-time art down the road. We'll see.
But that
acceptance piece is key. Is I am choosing. I am making my own future.
Exactly. There's a huge amount of empowerment that comes from not just accepting your circumstances, but accepting that you made your circumstances. You know, there's a lot. And like, if you're in a rock bottom spot, that's a great place to be.
Nowhere to go but up.
To accept that, okay, I'm here because of choices I've made. And I can also choose not to be in this position, you know? So if things are good or if things are bad, either way, if you can take ownership of where you are, it's huge.
It is. And be honest about where you want to be.
Yes. Yeah.
And keep it positive. I think when you make affirmations, you've got to say what you want, not what you don't want, because the universe can't understand the negative. And if you say, I don't want to be poor, it's going to pull that out and translate it to
poor.
Right. And move toward that. And so we want to keep the affirmations. I actually returned a set of meditation affirmations that I had purchased recently that had negatives in them. And I thought, that's not going to work.
No. So
it scared me a little bit. I called them and I'm like, what exactly were you guys thinking? But, you know, that doesn't work. So keep it positive, move towards what you want.
Yes.
Hold it in your mind. And think of it in terms of the future is now, is I am a successful artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a really great thought shift for me, is I tend to write my goals and my whys in my planner every day. And one of my goals is to become a full-time artist. And my why for a long time was so I could quit my day job. And that's using the negative as a propellant. And I realized I was giving way too much airtime to where I didn't want to be. And when I was able to recognize that and say, okay, I need to stop writing that piece down, figure out something else, then it becomes so much more exciting to move towards it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. It's a gift you're giving yourself to really absorb, this is what I want, and to speak of it like you already have it. Even though we all know you're creating your reality, you're moving towards it, but there is still that boost of receiving what you are moving toward, because you're giving yourself permission to get there, to receive it.
Yeah.
There's power in that.
Mm-hmm. I have a great quote on a post-it right in front of me by Florence Shin. It says, faith knows it has already received and acts accordingly.
Ooh, and I'm writing this down. Florence Shin?
Florence Shin,
Perfect. Talk to me about, on a practical implementation level, we've talked about the spiritual preparation level, time management tips for prioritizing the time that we do have.
Yeah. Yeah. I am a diehard planner. If you don't write it down, it doesn't happen. That's my
people.
Yeah. And it's more than just writing it down. Really, it's scheduling it. If you don't have time blocked off for your creative work or for your administrative work, it's just not going to happen. Or in my case, my administrative work becomes all the work I do, because that's the easy stuff for me.
Yeah,
and it's easy to like spin my wheels doing that. So for me, it's and knowing yourself, again, it comes back to knowing yourself too. I find that I am a morning person, but I tend to get really distracted and really into checking things off of lists, and then I let the painting go by the wayside. And it takes a certain amount of discipline to sit down and do the creative work. Like, once you're in it, it's great. And you're like, oh, this is, you know, my whole reason for being and everything. But sitting down in front of the canvas and opening your palette and putting paint on the canvas, they're really simple first steps, but there's like a barrier to entry there for some reason. So
it burns.
It's
difficult. It is. It's the inertia. People think inertia is getting stuck, not doing anything, but it's also can work in your favor once you get going.
Yes.
You said that. You said about being there and going, oh, this is the reason I exist, which mm-hmm. we do, mm-hmm. is if you can break through that barrier, mm-hmm. you'll be in the inertia of movement, of being at your art, at your creativity, mm-hmm. and you'll keep going until somebody pretty much pulls you away, kicking and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that nice?
Yes. And it's just knowing yourself. Like I tend to work in, I do best when I work in short little bursts. So less than an hour a day, if I can find that and set it aside, I go hard and use up all my energy and then I'm ready to move on to something else. Other people like to have the luxury of time and space to sit there and look at things and ponder, or they just need a big stretch of time to really get a lot done in one chunk, and that works better for them. So, you know, and this comes with time and experience and experimenting and figuring out what works for you. But once you know what works for you, plan it until it doesn't work anymore, and then go back to the drawing board. But putting it in your schedule, putting it on your, not just writing down what you're going to do, but when you're going to do it, I think is the key.
I agree with you. That's huge.
Yeah.
So tell me about your art now, as far as where and how do you sell it? What is your approach? Because I know you are selling your art, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I have a website. I've got an active Instagram account. And that's great to point people towards, but I've found the most rewarding avenues are in person. So, and I've actually made, I think, consistently the most sales to strangers, aka not friends and family, have been at coffee shops and just local, you know. I have had a couple of pieces in galleries, some solo shows and group shows. But the most success as far as just selling has been in coffee shops. And then I also do local markets. And actually this year I'm doing my local open studios event, which is going to be fun. So
what does that mean?
And so open studios, it's something, I don't think it started in Santa Cruz, but that's when it first came across my radar. Basically, artists will sign up in a group, someone will organize everything and put together a guidebook. And then for two weekends in October, folks can buy the guidebook and then go visit all these artists in their studios, and often their home studios too. So I'm opening up my home to the greater Chico public, which will be fun. We just bought our first house this year, so this has really felt like the first time I could participate. So that's really exciting. Not that I, you know, they do often have shared space options or outdoor space options. So there's ways, if you don't own your home or if you're not comfortable having people in your home, there's almost always ways around that. But yeah, I'm very excited about that. It's a big art shopping weekend. People generally go to shop, which is a big deal. So I'm planning on having a big range of, you know, I'm going to have my biggest 4x4 foot piece on display, but then lots of little pieces that are easier for people to take home with them. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that for sure.
I love it. And do you find that regarding the online sales, do you use a shopping cart? You have a plugin using WordPress? Has it been activity to a level that you feel is something you'd recommend? For myself, I didn't really spend time promoting mine and didn't have enough work on it at the time to move forward, but I'm thinking of returning to that. So I'm curious your impression of what you're using and what you think of it.
Yeah. So I use Squarespace, which is perfectly functional. All websites these days, or website builders, have their templates and things. So unless you're going to hire a dev team to make it totally customized, you're going to work within a template, which is frankly awesome, because then you don't have to think about it. You just plug and play. And that comes with, you know, a shop and a shopping cart and all of that. And it comes with some plugins too. Printful is one that I love, because it's a print on demand system. And like Zazzle or Redbubble, you can print your stuff on all kinds of different products, but then they also have fine art prints available. Canvas and metal and paper and framed. They've got a bunch of different options and you get to set your price. And the Squarespace plugin is set up so that when people check out on your Squarespace, it goes through to Printful and Printful ships it straight to your customer. So you never have to handle your prints, which is awesome, or whatever you're selling, t-shirts or, you know.
How does it handle taxes? I'm curious, because that's always something people ask me.
Yeah, so it will charge taxes based on the shipping address.
So you don't have to get involved in that.
Right. I mean, you will have to report your taxes at the end and everything, which is just comes with the territory. But it does set it aside and say, you know, these are your taxes, and it takes taxes. So it sends taken care of.
So you declare your income tax and it sends in your sales tax for you?
It won't do it for you, but it will give you a report so that you can pay your sales tax appropriately.
And a form. So yeah. it makes it plug and play.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Because I think I would take advantage of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I'm really planning on promoting. So I'm doing pet portraits until end of October, and then really going to be pushing print sales, particularly with maternity leave, because I won't have to do anything with those.
Yes.
We'll just send people to my website, go buy stuff there. It'll take care of itself, kind of a thing.
Yes. And something that's helpful, if you're not already, you're probably doing it already, but I found with pet portraits, especially because people don't always tend to buy prints of people portraits they don't know. It depends on the nature of the portrait and how kind of esoteric it is. But
They will buy dog breeds.
Yes, they will buy dog breeds and go, oh, that looks, you know, I've had people say, oh, that looks like my Buster and I want to buy that. And having them part of your regular paperwork, having them sign a disclaimer that allows you to sell prints of that piece and to own the likeness of the piece for marketing purposes and sales of print materials and print collateral.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It covers your butt.
Right, right. I use all my portraits in marketing, but I have never considered selling prints of the portraits.
Pet portraits?
Cover
the butt.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Taking a note.
Positive side of the big girl pants is you get to cover the butt.
Uh-huh. That's right.
So let's talk about the big question everybody asks everybody in our industry. How do you set your pricing? What are your prices, but what's your approach? Do you have a system?
Yeah. So I price by size and by medium. So what I've got a little calculator in my Google Sheet somewhere where length times width, and then I put a multiplier on that. So depending on the size, I'll multiply that by 3 or by 2.5. And then that gives me kind of a baseline to start with. And I do more for custom work. So I'll up the multiplier for custom work or commissions. And then I will adjust from there. And really, I've found with my prices, you know, I've gone up and down. I've kind of experimented a little bit to see, you know, will things move if they're more, if they're less? Don't be afraid to experiment. No one is going to remember what your prices were a month ago.
Unless you have a gallery, people, that's different, different conversation.
Yes, absolutely. I will say
the gallerists are going, wait.
Yes, I will say if you're going for the gallery scene, make your multiplier outrageous. Because they're going to take at least half of that. And the expectation at galleries is you're paying more money anyway. So,
well, and you're going to have to keep your prices level, even if you sell out your house. And I think Brenda and I were talking about this, Brenda Robinson, about her guilt over keeping her prices at gallery level if she was selling out of her house. And what I was telling her,
if she's already selling at that price, take it.
Well, and the thing is, if you flip your concept on its head, you're not taking advantage of your buyer.
Yeah.
You're not going to get your ass kicked by the gallery because suddenly you're undercutting them. Mm-hmm. And B, you're taking on the overhead of housing the art and promoting it that the gallery is doing for you when they take their cut. So just if you're working with a gallery, I'm sure they'll be happy to explain this to you, but keep it all uniform so that you're not making people try to purchase directly from you instead of the gallery.
Yes. And that is one thing I was going to say, is make sure your prices are consistent across the board and you know what they are, so that when people ask, you can just tell them the number, no hemming and hawing. Like, I see this all the time with tattoo artists. They'll give you a quote and then you'll get done and you'll be like, okay, so how much was it? And they'll say,
whatever you
like,
think.
Oh. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I shouldn't even ask. I should just give you what you quoted me, because it's always less than what they quoted.
Yes. And this is so crucial.
Yeah.
It's so crucial. Yeah. And if anybody has curious about that issue of the mindset around talking about your pricing, I recommend my episode interview with Marcus Sheridan, where he talks about, he's a marketer. He's Uber marketer, and he does a lot of public speaking. But his thing was learning to say, to state his pricing, to figure it out first, so you know what you're mm-hmm. going to say, and then state it as if you're going to follow that statement with the words, isn't that awesome? Mm-hmm. Even though you don't say that part, you don't go, isn't that awesome? Say it like that. Like, yeah, this painting's $10,000. Because when you can look your buyer in the eye with that kind of confidence that you are mm-hmm. giving them this gift of your creation, you're going to be able to sell the painting much more successfully than if you start looking at your feet and hemming and hawing. And mm-hmm. suddenly they're, you know, you don't want to pull the rug out from under them about the worth of what they're getting. They are looking to you. If they're asking your prices, they're looking to you to talk them into taking it home.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Make
they're
it easy
to be
for them.
Sold to. Yeah.
Yep. They want to be sold to.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. And it is very uncomfortable for artists to put on their salesman hat, but it's necessary. Unless you're going to work with a gallery, it is 100% necessary in order to sell your own work.
It is. And with the internet these days and COVID and everything mm-hmm. trending online mm-hmm. as a forum, you know, galleries are overwhelmed and they are finding that they are having less business and more requests. And it's important. It's become very important to do what you're doing and look to things like Squarespace, look to things like selling in person, finding mm-hmm. those avenues, making those inroads yourself, because the field is shrinking for availability at galleries.
Yeah.
The waiting lists are getting longer. And I'm not trying to be a naysayer. I'm endorsing the opportunity we have now to go and promote yourself and to have that accessibility mm-hmm. to your audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of which, before I get to our last question, I would like to interject and ask, how did you end up in those cafes? What did you say to the venues that you are showing at where your paintings are on the walls?
Yeah. So most of them have been coffee shops and cafes and restaurants and things that already have art up, and I noticed they're rotating. So I'll just send an email, you know, sometimes places will have on their websites where to specifically ask about getting your art up. So try to send to the correct email, but if all you can find is an info@, then start there and introduce yourself, say, you know, I frequent your shop a lot and I'd love to have my work up. This is what I do. This is my latest series, you know, keep it brief. Nobody likes to read long emails anymore. And make sure to put a link to your work so they can go and look and make sure that it's going to fit their vibe and everything. And it's also good to have your prices on there too, because a lot of coffee shops, well, not everyone is thinking about it, but some places want to make sure that your prices kind of fit in with what they're doing too. I had one place, it's a local bar here. They don't have anything on their walls. And I knew the waitress who was helping us. We were there for brunch. And I just asked her, I was like, hey, I noticed you've got a lot of blank space in here. Do you think you would like some art on your walls? And she gave me the owner's phone number. So, I mean, just ask and talk to people. Of course, we had that connection with that waitress that helped. But if you've got something to offer them, most people are willing to have the conversation. So, you know, I noticed there's no art on your walls. Would you like some art on your walls? And yeah, the conversation just went from there. And my work has been up there since the beginning of summer, I think.
And do you find that it's been profitable for you?
I've made a couple of sales from there. Thank you. I've gotten a lot of inquiries and eyes on the art, which is a huge piece.
And you can ask to have a sandwich named after you.
Yes, I can.
So one of the things that struck me when you were talking about the pricing piece, so that they're making sure it's a fit, is circling back to what we talked about in keeping your prices consistent. I'm going to say it's going to be important not to drop your prices to fit into the local sandwich shop. If your prices generally are way over that, find the venue to fit your pricing, not the other way around.
Yep. If the local sandwich shop doesn't like your prices, then the local sandwich shop is not for you.
Perfect. Yep. Okay. So thank you so much for your time today. You know, I absolutely adore you. I am definitely your sister from another mister. And I love your creativity. Your energy is truly inspiring. Wrap us up with your best advice for listeners who want to really flourish in their art and maybe become full-time artists.
The advice I would give is to be a scientist, which sounds counterintuitive to tell a bunch of artists, but it's true. If you think about the scientist's approach to life or to their, you know, whatever they're trying to figure out, is they've got a goal. Let's see what happens when I do X, Y, and Z. And then they make a plan to do X, Y, and Z. They keep track of the results over time, and then they adjust from there. So I think it's really easy to get started on a path and not see results right away, or get distracted by other shiny things and not give things sufficient time and consistency to see if it actually works. So, I mean, this can be applied to anything, but particularly in art and in business, it's been huge for me to help me stay focused. And I like to plan. I look at the year, I break that down into quarters, months, weeks, so on and so forth. So depending on the goal, I'll put a timeline on it, and then I'll make sure to have checkpoints, you know, to see, is this working? Do I need to adjust on the way? Things like that. And it's really helped me to feel good about what I'm doing and to feel like I have a plan and I know where I'm going and I know what I'm doing, instead of feeling like, oh, nothing's working and, you know, kind of frantic. So just from an emotional standpoint, being a scientist, I highly recommend. But then also from actually seeing results, unless you're being consistent with your actions, you're not going to know if this was a fluke or if this is because of the actions and steps you've taken. So that's what I would say. Be a scientist.
This wraps up my interview with American painter Kira Barsody. Be sure to grab your copy of Kira's personal planner sheet at passionatepainterpodcast.com/episode80. Don't forget that in addition to my full masterclass, The Portrait Code, there are now 7 standalone spotlight classes for targeted training in design, composition, perspective, color theory, and anatomy, as well as a standalone portrait painting demonstration. Something for everyone. You can check them all out at passionatepainteracademy.com. Until next time, go make something.